Well, first of all, I'd like to thank all of you for being present this evening. I know you don't have a regular Saturday program. I think this was a program that was announced because I'm coming. So I'm a little embarrassed that so many people have shown up. But thank you for coming. We'll be here for 2 days. Well, what's left of today. And tomorrow we have a program, 2 programs tomorrow actually, culminating in the Sunday program. So we're always happy to be able to visit this center in D.C. annually during our tour of America. Actually, we're coming to the conclusion of our tour. Myself and Sri Prahlad have visited the West Coast and the Midwest and the Deep South, and we're concluding here. Not concluding, but we're coming through D.C. and soon we'll be doing Gaur Purnima with the devotees at New Brindavan. So happy to be here. Thank you for coming. We've chosen a verse almost at random from the 5th canto of the 19th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's entitled The Island of Jambudvip. And this is text number 10. It's one of those verses where it's almost prose, the Sanskrit. There's no meter because it's many, many words. So we're just going to skip the Sanskrit so I don't look more foolish than I am. And we'll just go straight into the translation here. Translation, 5:19:10. In his own book, known as Narada Pancharatra, Bhagavan Narada has very vividly described how to work to achieve the ultimate goal of life, devotion, through knowledge and through execution of the mystic yoga system. He has also described the glories of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The great sage Narada instructed the tenets of this transcendental literature to Savarni Manu in order to teach those inhabitants of Bharatvarsha who strictly follow the principles of Vanashram Dharma how to achieve the devotional service of the Lord. Thus Narada Muni, along with the other inhabitants of Bharatvarsha, always engage in the service of Naranarayan, and he chants as follows. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has clearly declared, Bharata Bhumi Haila Manusha Janma Yara Janma Shataka Kari Karapara Upakara. The real success or fulfillment of the mission of human life can be achieved in India. Bharatvarsha. Because in Bharatvarsha, the purpose of life and the method for achieving success are evident. People should take advantage of the opportunity afforded by Bharatvarsha. And this is especially so for those who are following the principles of Varnashrama, Dharma. If we do not take to the principles of Varnashrama Dharma by accepting the 4 orders, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra, and the 4 orders of spiritual life, brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas, then there can be no question of success in life. Unfortunately, because of the influence of Kali Yuga, everything is now being lost. The inhabitants of Bharatvarsha are gradually becoming degraded, malicious, and yavanas. How then will they teach others? Therefore, this Krishna conscious movement has been started not only for the inhabitants of Bharatvarsha, India, but for all the people of the world, as announced by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There is still time. And if the inhabitants of Bharatvarsha take this movement of Krishna consciousness seriously, the entire world will be saved from gliding down to a hellish condition. The Krishna conscious movement follows the process of Panchatrika Vidhi and that of Bhagavad Vidhi simultaneously, so that people can take advantage of the movement and make their lives successful. So, in this very beautiful verse from the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we are first and foremost introduced to a very illustrious personality, Narada Muni. He's addressed here as Bhagavan Narada. The great sage Parashara Muni, he's described this word Bhagavan. Bhag means opulence, referring to six opulences: knowledge, beauty, intelligence, strength, fame, and renunciation. And van, which means the person who possesses those in full. We've discussed, all of us, many times, that everyone has some opulences. But no one has all these opulences in full. You may meet a special person who has one opulence in full on this planet. Somebody may be the most wealthy, but they may not be the most beautiful. Someone may be very strong, but they may not be very renounced. Someone can be very intelligent, but they may not be very beautiful. It's like Albert Einstein. He was very intelligent, but he wasn't the most handsome. So we may possess one or two opulences, but Bhagavan means that single person who possesses each opulence in full, totally, all six. And that person, Parashara Muni said, that's the original person. That's God. That's Bhagavan. And who is that? It's Krishna. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Nadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. When people ask, what does Krishna mean? We say Krishna means the most attractive person. Why is he attractive? Because he's full of knowledge, he's very beautiful, he's extremely intelligent, he's the strongest of the strong, he's very famous. Everyone's heard about God. Whether they believe in him or not, everybody's heard about God. And he's the most renounced. So Krishna is Bhagavan. We don't accept Krishna whimsically or sentimentally as the Supreme Person. We're very careful in our selection. Because Ishapanishad said there's one result that comes by worshipping what is supreme. And there's another result which comes by worshipping what is not supreme. So many people, due to a poor fund of knowledge, they worship a devata or a powerful person as God. Incomplete knowledge. But they don't get the same result if you worship Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna alone, he deserves the title Bhagavan. Bhagavan Shri Krishna. In India, we just say Bhagavan. Referring to God, we say Bhagavan. Is it Bhagavan? So this is a title reserved for a singular person who possesses all opulence, the most attractive person, Krishna. And technically no one else should use this title, Bhagavan. But sometimes people do, in India, not so much outside of India. But there's many imposter Bhagavans. One time Prabhupada said, you'll find a Bhagavan on every street corner in Bombay, he said one time. I haven't heard of so much these days, but when Prabhupada was with us and previously, it was very popular. Someone would say they're an incarnation. So how is it that in this verse, in the Bhagavatam itself, which describes the glories of Bhagavan, Shri Krishna, how is it that Narada Muni, who with all due respect is a Jivatma, He's a spirit soul like you and me. Well, not exactly like you and me. He's a perfected soul. He's a self-realized. He's a pure devotee of the Lord. He's a pure soul. But he's Jivatma. He's part and parcel of Krishna. He's the same as Krishna, not in quantity, but in quality. How is the Bhagavatam itself addressing him as Bhagavan, Bhagavan Narada? It appears contradictory. There can't be two Bhagavans. There will be one absolute truth, one supreme personality of Godhead, owner of all opulences. What's going on here? This is the Bhagavatam. This is the authorized shastra for understanding the science of Krishna consciousness, awakening our bhakti for Krishna. How is it referring to this jivatma as Bhagavan Narada? It's there in the Sanskrit text. Well, Srila Prabhupada answers this question in a very interesting way in the Krishna book, which of course is a summary study of the 10th canto of this great work, Bhagavatam. There he says that the Supreme Lord himself, Bhagavan, is always ready to bestow all of his opulences upon his pure devotee of the Lord for the purpose of spreading Krishna consciousness. This means that the Lord is prepared to give the knowledge, his beauty, his intelligence, his strength, his fame, and renunciation to his devotee. And of course, the classic example is that the government, sometimes or often the government, empowers an ambassador to represent the country in a foreign country. That ambassador carries all the weight of the government. If we send an ambassador to France, to La Paris, La France, La Paris, dans le quartier de, in the section of the city where they have the embassies, if you go to visit that American embassy, American law runs that embassy, not French law. It's considered American territory. That's why they don't always give big plots of land to the embassies. It becomes American soil. And the person, the ambassador who's living in there, he carries the weight of the entire American government. If you please him, America's pleased with you. If you displease him, all hell will break loose. The ambassador has a very special... Therefore, each government is very careful to appoint a qualified ambassador to the various countries around the world. There's so many countries, so we need good ambassadors who represent the country, America. He carries the weight of the government. So in the same way, the Lord will empower a particular person to represent him in the material world. And in the case of Narada Muni, who has this mission of traveling not only on the earth, but to lower planetary systems, to higher planetary systems, and back to Vaikuntha. Prabhupada once referred to him as a transcendental spaceman in the 1960s. There was this race to get to the moon, so there was a spaceman, a spacecraft, and outer space. And so Prabhupada described, to give the new devotees who had just come to the movement an idea, he's a transcendental spaceman, and he can travel at will throughout the entire cosmic creation. And what's even more amazing is that he can return to Vaikuntha at will and come back again. He's a very special personality. He has a special mission. He never stops. He doesn't let up. It's a special mission, Narada. He keeps coming back. So therefore it's seen that sometimes a devotee acts as powerfully as God. And in very special cases, sometimes a devotee appears to be even more powerful than God himself. You may know the story that one time a devotee said to Srila Prabhupada, If Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he is described in this, the same Bhagavatam, 11th canto, Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Shango Panga Shiparshadam Yagnai Sen Kitan Payar Yajantihi Shu Medashaha. That the same personality of Godhead who appeared in Dupura Yuga, bluish black like the monsoon cloud, has again appeared in the age of Kali in a golden form to disseminate Dharma in the form of the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. He will be recognized by the fact that he's always surrounded by his confidential associates who are singing names of God. That personality is Lord Chaitanya. So it's not difficult for the Lord. This is his business when he comes to this world, to disseminate Dharma. He doesn't come for any other reason. He doesn't come here like we do, foolishly looking for some temporary happiness in this world. He comes for the express purpose of delivering the conditioned souls. He can liberate the entire three worlds in an instant if he so desires. So the disciple asked Srila Prabhupada, if Lord Chaitanya is God, then why didn't he spread the Sankirtan movement outside of India? That child's, I can't concentrate. Just until he cools down. Prabhupada said, the disciple said, if he's God, why didn't he spread the movement all over the world? They were on a morning walk, so Prabhupada stopped and he thought for a moment. And then we hear how he put his cane into the sand. He looked up to the heavens and he said, why didn't he spread the Sankirtan movement all over the world? Because he wanted me to do it. Now, why would the Lord want his devotee to spread the Sankirtan movement all over the world? Because the Lord takes pleasure in making his devotee famous. There's a bit of a competition between the Lord and the devotee. The devotee very much wants to glorify the Lord, and the Lord very much wants to glorify his devotee. Because love is something reciprocal. If you love someone, you're constantly thinking about them, meditating on them, making plans to be with them, to serve them. You're always talking about their attributes and their glories. So the pure devotee, he has pure love for God, so you wouldn't expect he would be doing anything other than, you know, making arrangements to spread the Lord's glories. He's always singing his name, speaking about his pastime. Nam, Rup, Gun, Leela. But the Lord loves his devotee as much as the devotee loves the Lord. So the Lord is also speaking about the glories of his devotee. It's not a one-way street love. The husband loves the wife, and the wife loves the husband. If either of them don't love it, then you'll have a failed marriage. And in true love, there's always this competition. So that just as the devotee goes to great efforts to spread the glories of the Lord likes to make his devotee famous. So in spreading the Sankirtan movement all over the world, Srila Prabhupada became very famous amongst all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Because there was always a lot of talk since the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about spreading the Sankirtan movement to every town and village, because that was the prediction of Gauranga. He made a prediction that one day this chanting of Hare Krishna would go to every town and village of the world. But we were told that many Gaudiyas thought that was just Gaudadesh, or maybe it was also Orissa, or maybe UP, or maybe Andhra, or maybe, you know, like that. Because that was their world. They weren't thinking beyond, just like many people don't think beyond America. They don't think beyond their state. They don't think beyond their village. They don't think beyond their garden. Many people that never traveled, nowadays it's, of course, not so much like that, but for a long time people just, or even today, people don't really travel that much. You know, devotees are traveling a lot. Devotees travel a lot because they go for Sangha, they go for association, they go for a festival, they go to India. In the old days, to go to India, we had to work hard for 3 or 4 years on Sankirtan before our temple president would give us the, you know, opportunity to go to. But nowadays, of course, with the recession, it's probably going to go down, down, down. So, Lord likes to make his devotee famous. So he empowered Śrīla Prabhupāda, and Śrīla Prabhupāda became famous all over the world. He actually did it. It was only talked about before. Maybe, Prabhupāda did the most amazing thing. He fulfilled the desire of all the predecessor acharyas who knew that it was the movement was supposed to go to every country of the world. The Lord likes to make his devotee famous because whatever a great man does, the common man will follow in his footsteps. Therefore, the devotee should become famous so people will follow their exalted example. One time a newspaper reporter, he criticized Prabhupada. You have so much money as the leader of this movement. Prabhupada shot back, yes, we should have all the money because we're the only ones who know how to use it properly. Here's a good leadership trait. At the moment here in America, we're experiencing a recession. You know it better than me. I also know it because I'm trying to collect for my festival tour in Poland. And it's really hard this year. Not because people don't want to give, because it's just a recession, you know. I'm going to cut down some of the shows in my festival tour. I'm thinking, actually, this shouldn't have to be like that. During recession, people are more eager to hear spiritual life. They're going through distress. Prabhupada says that the four reasons people come to God, or Gita describes, people are curious, or they need material facility, looking for knowledge or distress. The main reason is people are distressed, they turn to God. So the recession, we shouldn't become depressed. We shouldn't be discouraged as devotees. This is the best time to preach. So if many things may have to suffer a little bit, but the preaching shouldn't suffer. We should make sure the preaching goes on because this is the best time to preach. But we see that the recession is there due in part to the mishandling of money by VIPs. You know more than me. You're from the D.C. area, Washington, D.C. You probably read about it all the time. The bankers, the politicians, they've misused or abused the system for selfish reasons. And when non-devotees use the Lakshmi for their own selfish purposes, it ultimately filters down. It causes distress in society. And that's one of the reasons we're facing it. It was all mismanaged. Nothing new. It's been happening since the beginning of time. We hear how Ravana, he stole the goddess of fortune, Sita, Lakshmiji, to enjoy for himself. And it caused so much distress within the universe. Ravana, one translation of Ravana's name, Ravana means he who makes the universe scream. Did you know that? That's one translation of Ravana's name. He who makes the universe scream. Hey, we're in a recession! So society needs good, transparent leadership, especially spiritual leaders, who the people could look to for an example. To follow. It's not unheard of in nowadays, the leaders are like Vaishyas and Sudras, like people who have a lot of capital. They're very influential. Or rock stars, musicians, and stuff, athletes like sudras, they're the leaders. But in Vedic times, who were the leaders? Who were the heroes? The heroes were Kshatriyas. And more important, the heroes were Brahmanas. People looked to the Brahmanas for spiritual guidance. They never forgot the goal of life, and those persons who were most expert in demonstrating how to live a life by which one could go back to Godhead were the Brahmanas. They were living the ideal life if you wanted to go back home, back to Godhead. They were living in the mode of goodness and practicing dharma, which elevated them beyond goodness to shuddhasattva, to pure, to transcendental goodness, and thereby giving the opportunity to go back to Godhead. So because most people were interested in going back to the spiritual world, the Brahmins were the heroes. They were the heroes. They didn't have newspapers then, but if they did, the Brahmins would be on the front page every day. What did he do? He did a yajna. Wow! Nowadays you read about a sport event, or you read about a politician who falls down, or a banker. But it was only good news in Satya Yuga. Good news in Treta Yuga. Pretty good news in Dwapara Yuga. All the bad news started in Kali Yuga. When I was a boy, I remember that one quarter of the back page of the local newspaper had good news. And nowadays it's hard to find. Mostly bad news because it's Kali Yuga. But it was good, and the people had a higher goal of life. They had leadership to look to be inspired, and those leaders were in turn sharing their good fortune with the population, instructing them, preaching, like that. So the Lord likes to make His devotees famous. So Prabhupada became famous by spreading Krishna consciousness. So He's famous. He's famous in India. And he's famous all over the world now. At least it's our duty to make Śrīla Prabhupāda famous, because through Śrīla Prabhupāda we can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So hopefully in the future devotees will be in positions to inspire people to become devotees themselves. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that we will know that the Sankirtan movement is making some progress when we see the high court judges are wearing Vaishnav tilak. Now, I don't know, did the other... We have our... what's it called? The 10 top judges in America? What do they call it? Supreme Court? Are they wearing the Vaishnav tilak? So we have a lot of work to do. So this is one way that you can measure a Vaishnava. By his ability to make other persons Vaishnavas. Śrīla Prabhupāda is accepted as... He's becoming more and more accepted amongst Vaishnavas. Not only our Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but the Sri and the Madhvas. He's being accepted as unique in the history of Vaishnavism, because he converted so many souls to Krishna consciousness. Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravaratana. That unless one is empowered by Krishna, one cannot propagate the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Srila Prabhupada returned to India in 1971, victorious in having at least begun pioneering Krishna consciousness in the West, some of his godbrothers criticized him that he, you know, that anyone could have done it. It was so simple. You just took a boat and you went to New York City and you started chanting Hare Krishna, and naturally people started coming because the holy names are all attractive. Then you just gave them some prasad. I mean, we could have done it. So Prabhupada was so well... It's amazing how well educated Prabhupada was. Not only in deep spiritual matters, but just in life. This is what made him such an expert preacher. He was in tune with society. He knew how to plant the seed of Krishna consciousness. So he turned to them. He remembered one story he'd heard about Christopher Columbus. Christopher Columbus was the one who found America. Of course, there are a lot of people living here before, but anyway, according to the Europeans, he discovered America. Now, at that time, it was quite risky to sail from Spain or Portugal into the unknown world. That they didn't know so much about what the world was and where the continents were situated, etc. So it was treacherous. Many explorers lost their lives. Somehow Columbus made it to near America, south of Florida, North America, and then he sailed back. And out of a little bit of, you could say, jealousy, some of the other ministers or some of the other explorers, they said, yeah, but anyone could have done it. You just got on a boat and you went west and bumped into America. So Christopher Columbus was a very intelligent person. He took an egg and he put it on the table. He said, okay, make this egg stand up. So all the people who were a little bit criticizing, they just tried to balance the egg like that, but of course, you know, an egg, it just rolled over and like this, and just, and no one could make it stand up. Like, rah! So Christopher Columbus, he took a knife, he picked the egg up, he said, I can do it. He took a knife and he chopped off the bottom part of the egg and it stood it up. So then they said, oh, anyone could have done that. So he said, well, then why didn't you do it? So Prabhupada used this argument when he came back to India. Anyone could have done, so then why didn't you do? They couldn't do because he was the chosen son, you could say. There were signs that Prabhupada was going to do like that from the very birth, you could say. When the astrologer was called, then he looked at Prabhupada's chart and he said, this child, one day he'll open 108 temples of Krishna all over the world. Then when he finally met his spiritual master, Bhaktisananda Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktisananda Saraswati Thakur marked him, you look like a nice, educated boy. Why don't you take the message of Lord Chaitanya to the English-speaking world? And then later, when his application came up for initiation, The Bhaktisananda Saraswati said, Abhai? Yes, I'll accept him. He hears nicely. Later he said, one who hears nicely, he'll speak nicely. So he was always noting some special characteristics in his spiritual son. And later on, when the Gaudiya Math was flourishing quite nicely, some of the senior men, the sannyasis, they were seeing that Bhaktisananda Saraswati was giving a lot of attention to our Srila Prabhupada. He would spend time with him. It appeared he felt very comfortable with him. And there were incidences where we know he would be walking with Bhaktisananda Saraswati, like at Radhakund, and they would be talking. And that famous quote came where Bhaktisananda Saraswati told our Prabhupada, if you ever get money, you print books. And he predicted a fire in the Gaudiya Math after his departure. Like that, you could see there. So they were complaining. This Abhai, what does he do? He's a householder. He's just a householder. He's not going out and preaching like we are, going all over and opening centers and making devotees and raising. He's just giving some donations. They were complaining. And Bhaktisananda Saraswati became very angry. He said, do not speak like that. In the end, he will do everything. And he did. So a preacher becomes empowered by the Lord for a specific purpose of spreading the Sankirtan movement. And when he's particularly empowered, then we have to recognize that. And in the case of Narada Muni, the Bhagavatam itself gives him recognizes his service, as we say in the military, above and beyond the call of duty. He gets the title two or three times in the Bhagavatam, actually. Bhagavan Narada. Although this title is only meant for Krishna, he gets the title Bhagavan Narada, not because he's God, but because he's the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. We have the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we have the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. The best example amongst all the devotees who gives the greatest pleasure to the Lord, so that we can follow in his footsteps. Who is that person who's giving the greatest service? Why do we want to know? We want to follow that person. Just like the kids, they all have their heroes in the sports. And they want to be like that person. When I was a kid, we had a famous... I was from San Francisco. We had San Francisco 49ers. And the quarterback was Y.A. Tittle. He was famous amongst us 5th graders and 6th graders. We worshipped him. We had pictures of him everywhere. We didn't do artik or anything like that. But, you know, we were always talking about him and, you know, seeing what scores he made, how many touchdowns and how many passes he'd thrown. It's just, you know, we were just totally absorbed. And my father worked for a well-known, still well-known advertising organization called BBDO. He had a very high position there. And the San Francisco 49ers hired BBDO for a publicity campaign to get them even more famous. So my father was the person going and meeting, you know, doing negotiations, and he met Y.A. Tittle, the famous quarterback. And he said, "I've got a son who worships you." So Mr. Tittle said, "Well, let me give him my autograph." So my father came home one day. It was like, it could have been for me like a note from God or something. I had Y.A. Tittle's, and I went to school, and boy, I was the most popular kid. The other boys had to pay 50 cents to see my autograph, or see the autograph of Y.A. Tittle. And then my father, he arranged that I could personally meet him. I couldn't sleep that night. And it was a game, it was a Saturday game, actually. I forget who the 49ers were playing, but we went down to Kent to, I forget what, Keyser Stadium, that's what it was, Keyser Stadium. And my father took me, you know, right to the sidelines. It was just before the game was even, Y.A. Tittle was there. He was such a generous man, such a kind-hearted person, such a good coach, leader, that, you know, the team was ready to run on the field, and my father brought me down and said, "Hey, well, I could spend a couple of minutes with my son." So he took off his helmet and we went off to the side. We started throwing passes back and forth to each other. He'd throw the football. You know, he said, "Hold it like this," he said. You'll win every game. You'll make every pass. You know? And then he showed me a diagram of a few, you know, because I was actually a left end and my best friend was the quarterback in our little school scrimmages, you know. So he showed us a few tricks like that, which we used later, and we won a lot of games because of what. So he was. Then he kneeled down. He said, "So, you know, to be a good football star, you're gonna have to be a clean kid. So don't smoke and don't drink. There were no drugs in those days that I knew of. Don't drink and you know, don't skip school." And he started instructing me all these moral principles. You know, he said, I've got a special way to show them. And the captain came over and said, "Mr. Tittle, you know, we've got a game to play now. There's 100,000 people in the stadium waiting for you to come. We're going to start the game." He said, "Just one more throw," he said. So they held the whole thing up. Wait, he threw the ball one more time and showed up. And I was so grateful for him. To this, you know, just a kid, but the moments he spent with me were some of the most memorable in my life. And it really helped direct me. Later when I got into trouble, I used to remember his words. And partly because of what he told me, I stopped the nonsense things I was doing, which I won't tell you now. And therefore, I myself spend a lot of time with the youth in our movement. Because just a few moments of, you know, attention he gave me, directed me, and helped me in so many ways. So, like that, if leadership is so important, so therefore, if the devotees become the leaders and they have the good qualities, then, you know, people will be inspired in Krishna consciousness. Narada Muni is a perfect example because he's always giving his association to others. Prabhupada said the duty of a first-class man is to make a fifth-class man also a first-class man. And this is why Vedic culture fell apart, because the brahmanas became puffed up. They became proud of their position. And rather than elevating others to their brahminical status, they created this bogus philosophy that you were born Brahmin, and you couldn't become Brahmin by practice and by diksha or mercy. You had to be born. This is all concoction. They call it the caste system, and many people have an unfavorable impression of India because of this. What caste? There's no caste system in India. The word doesn't even exist there. Varnashram dharma, by your qualification, not by birth. So Narada Muni, he understands this. He wasn't born a brahmana. Narada Muni was born the son of a maidservant. And because of the Vaishnavas, the Bhaktivedantas came to his house and he got a little of their prasad, which inspired him to take up devotional service and become qualified and get mercy, he became the most exalted. He took a little prasad one day from the plate of the Vaishnava. And he said, by taking that prasad, the very nature of the transcendentalist became attractive to him. And then what did he do? He began sharing his good fortune with others. He became such a great personality that he instructed Srila Vyasadeva. He became the guru of Prahlad Maharaj. He became the guru of Dhruva Maharaj. But you could say his real greatness, what was his real greatness? His real greatness was that he became the guru of Magrari the hunter. He became the guru of Valmiki. This is leadership. He even had a snake as his disciple. We hear. He had one snake as his disciple. The snake slithered up and said, Guru Maharaj, I want to be your disciple. And he accepted the snake as his disciple. He had to follow five principles. No meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, and no biting. So the snake accepted this principle of not biting, because snakes are that very out of envy they bite. So no biting. So the snake, the story is, the pastime is, it's not mythology, it's history. The snake slithered back through town, and understanding the snake had taken this vow not to bite, the children of the town took advantage and they started throwing sticks and stones at the snake. And the snake couldn't bite, so he had to tolerate. And he came back to his guru, Guru Maharaj, I'm not supposed to bite, but the kids are beating me up. So Narada Muni said to his disciple snake, I think he gave him the name Ananta Sheshadas. My dear Ananta Shesha Das, children, too much. Yeah, you can come back when you're quiet. Where was I? Yeah. So he said, I told you. To follow to surrender to me, but I didn't say to give up your intelligence. When one surrenders to a spiritual master, he surrenders everything. Shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, shmaranam, padasevanam, archanam, bandham, dasam, sakyam, atmanivedanam. Fully surrender, you surrender everything. But it doesn't mean you surrender your intelligence. You still use your intelligence in the service. It's not blind faith. We come into the movement with lots of questions and challenging, and when we're defeated by the superior knowledge of Krishna consciousness, we use our intelligence to go deeper into the philosophy. And we use our intelligence to spread Krishna consciousness. So I didn't tell you to give up your intelligence. You surrender. Don't give. Just when they're throwing sticks, then show your fangs. And believe me, those kids will run the other way. So Narada is such a magnanimous person. Krishna made him so famous because he's such a good example for us to follow. And we're all meant to follow in the footsteps of Bhagavan Narada. One time a disciple said to Srila Prabhupada, "I want to be just like you." And the other disciples were angry. "You can't say that you want to be like Prabhupada." But Prabhupada took it another way. He said, "Oh, very nice. Thank you." Because the spiritual master is sometimes called acharya. It means he teaches by example, with the hope the disciple will come up to the mark. Because only by coming to that perfected stage of Krishna consciousness can you go back home, back to Godhead. So we also want to become powerful devotees. But power doesn't mean money, manpower, charisma. What does power mean? How do you get in Washington, how do you get power? You get power by your charisma and your talking and your diplomacy and your scheming and your planning and your money and your friends. It's not what you know, it's who you know to climb the corporate ladder, the political ladder. And you get to the top. But what does power mean in Krishna consciousness? Whoa, hold on. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavicham, vada, gadisha, kamae, mama janmani, janmani, ishvare, bhavata, bhakti, ahai. Power is Krishna consciousness is anything but those things. Lord, I have no desire to get money, power. I don't want to enjoy the opposite sex. I don't want to become famous. What's left? I just want to be your servant. Just give me a little service and I'll be happy. So, how do you become powerful in order to represent the... Power is purity. Preaching is the essence. Books are the basis. Utility is the principle. And purity is the force. Our position is more like to act as a medium, a transparent via medium for Krishna's mercy. We never think that we ourselves deliver someone to Krishna. Whether we deliver our spiritual master's mercy. It's by their mercy. We're just passing on what we've heard, that the message is so powerful that if a person listens attentively and takes it up, then they start making advancement in Krishna consciousness. We're the transparent via medium. We have to always remember that. And there's different, just like there's different qualities of metal which can be a medium to transfer, like electricity, for example. Like you have lead, you have copper, you have gold. Through those metals, there's a transferal of energy, like or telephone lines or whatever. Now, silver and gold are the best medium for passing that message on without interference. In the old days, when Sri Prahlada and I were preaching in Eastern Europe, or you'll know in India. I remember in India in the old days, in Vrindavan. Nowadays in Vrindavan, everyone's got cell phone. Every rickshawwala in Vrindavan has cell phone. You know, you're going down the street and his cell phone rings and he's, you know, talking to his wife in some mud hut somewhere. And you couldn't believe it. But in the old days, if you wanted to make a phone call in Vrindavan, you had to go to the post office and you had to ask for a lightning call. You remember lightning call? "I want to make lightning call to Delhi." And you had to wait 4 or 5 hours. And then, you know, you'd get somebody on the line, "Hello!" You had to scream. And you'd hear this faint, "Hello!" You know, and they were screaming as loud as you. It was lightning call. And God forbid if you wanted to call Bombay or Calcutta. You had to be a very powerful voice and you'd come away. Horse, what happened? You let a kirtan? I made a phone call. Because, you know, there was a village and the lines, whatever the metal they were using, I'm sure it's part of the problem. They were using lead or something. And nowadays, it's, you know, the cell phone. So it was the same when we used to be in Eastern Europe. We used to make these calls. You'd have to scream, especially in Russia. But when the pure metal's inserted, they change the whole system around, then it becomes something very simple. So if we want to pass on Krishna's message, we want to follow in the footsteps of Bhagavan Narada, then our hearts have to become pure. Otherwise the message will be distorted. Through what? Through the lust, through the anger, through the greed. These are the three gates leading to hell in the heart. So to be effective in our mission, because after all, Krishna consciousness, this is a missionary movement. You wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't. It's not that you came looking for Krishna consciousness. In most cases, Krishna consciousness came looking for you. No one invited Srila Prabhupada to this country of the United States of America. He came on his own initiative. Only because of him we're all sitting here. And because of the work of his representatives who pioneered the movement throughout this. So, just as it came to you, you have to take it to others. That's what it means to be a devotee. There's a waiting time where you can get fixed up. But this is a missionary movement. Nothing more, nothing less. And to achieve perfection, you have to follow in the footsteps of your spiritual master. I'm sure all of you have a spiritual master, or you're aspiring, or you're thinking about accepting a guru. What is his business? Mahaprabhu kirtana nita gita bharitra madhyam. Yes, he's always engaged in the missionary activity of the spreading Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement. It's not the business of the Maharajas only. It's the business of anyone who's been graced. You didn't come looking, the movement came to you. And it doesn't stop here, that Lord Chaitanya is satisfied. Oh yes, I'm satisfied now. That in this great area of America, in Washington, D.C., there's 10,000 people chanting Hare Krishna. How many people are living here? Millions, more than 10 million. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said he would be satisfied when the 14 worlds are chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. So we have a lot to do, but charity begins at home. It begins by making the heart pure so this transcendental message can come through loud and clear without any inconsistency, without any impurity, and people can hear and understand. And be fortunate to be sitting here just like all of you. Remember in the old days I passed through Washington, D.C., there wasn't many devotees. I didn't see any of you sitting here. But now you're here by the causeless mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So let's increase the ranks and give great pleasure to Gorni Thai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, and Shishi Ranamadan Mohan. Grantara Shimad Bhagavatam Ki Or Premanandi Hare Krishna.